Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Today is November 22nd, 2017. It's the day before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is tomorrow. So welcome to episode, good Lord, I believe it is 30 of the Drop Set. Things happen a little bit differently this week. Kind of. There's a few things that have changed, and they will all be very subtle, and nobody will notice, probably. But it's all good. So I'm happy to have you here. Thank you for joining me. So if you are listening to the audio version of this via iTunes, Google Play, or through the website at 5starphysique.com, thank you. I am happy to have you here. If you are watching on YouTube, hi there. Good to have you as well. Thank you. If you are getting this any other way, you're not, because this week I am not doing a live stream on either Instagram or Facebook. There were some... I'll be totally transparent. I don't have a lot of eyeballs on those usually. And, you know, I'll post them later on. But I know that on Instagram, it can be a pain in the butt to try and sift through like a 45-minute long, which is how long these podcasts are, video of something in somebody's Instagram story. And the Facebook viewership wasn't super high, and a lot of that has to do with the algorithm and how Facebook pages are being presented to audiences and the way that that's changing now. So I'm cutting out all that. I'm not doing any of this live for right now. That may change in the near future, but right now it's just getting recorded. It gives me a little bit more freedom and flexibility on how I record this, and also there's no live comments when it's happening, so on the instances where somebody would chime in, it'll just be less distracting, and I can keep my wits about me a little bit better. So that's the first thing that's changing here. The second thing, if you're watching on YouTube, hey, I just got a wide angle lens for my iPhone, so you can see more of the wonderful basement decor around me, and it obscures my face a little bit too, so I'm taking that as a welcome addition also. The lens looks a little bit blurry. I don't know what's up with that, but anyway, that's that. Other than that, we're in good shape here. So tomorrow's Thanksgiving. What are your plans? My plans? I am staying home while my wife goes out of state to visit family. So we have two dogs. One of them is old and kind of feeble. Hi, Bella. I'm talking about you. And she doesn't travel well. We can't board her, so somebody's got to stay here. Either we can have a friend come, but none of our friends were available to come hang out with her or keep her. So I stay behind, and I will be watching her. So, don't you worry about me. I'll get some food tomorrow. We're gonna make that happen. Bella actually had quite an eventful week. I'll give you the dog update here really quickly. We have a 2-story house. We moved in here 1st of July. This year, and one of my first duties as homeowner was to build a gate for the top of the steps to keep Bella, who has a little bit of Mr. Magoo in her, if you're familiar with that character, to keep her from falling down the steps, because she totally would. She's kind of blind, she's kind of deaf, she doesn't move around super well, and we knew that would be bad news. Well, it happened this week. She fell into the gate just right, opened it, and managed to fall her way all the way down the stairs. I was in the kitchen, and I heard something bump against the gate, and I'm like, what's that? And it took me a second to go around the corner and look, and there I see her. She's about 7 steps down, and she's going down face first on her stomach, so she's not rolling over at least, because that would have been really bad. And I chase after her, and she's going down a couple at a time, and then she stops very briefly, and then she goes down a couple more. And by the time I get to her, it's all the way down at the bottom. So she'd gone down about 21 steps. I picked her up, and she had this look on her face like, what's going on? That was kind of cool. What happened? Cause she's just not very aware of her surroundings, I don't think, but she was fine. And then the next day around noon, I had her outside. I went to bring her in, and her back left leg was not working at all. It seemed like it was paralyzed. It was kind of dragging back behind her a little bit. So we took her into the vet, and the vet says, most likely, you know, it's certainly nothing's broken, because if that was the case, it would have happened right after she fell. Most likely it could be a bruised ligament. It could be, a spinal nerve issue or something like that. It's hard to say, but we gave her some prednisone. And I tell you what, within 2 hours of taking that first dose, she was up around and putting a little bit of weight on it again. So for being a 16-year-old little pooch, she is one resilient little chick. So, anyway, that's the dog update. I say that just because I don't have a whole lot of news to go over for the week. I took 3 days off, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off from the gym this last week to let my elbow heal up a little bit. So I was in there on Wednesday, and I was doing arms and, all the extension stuff. Triceps is fine, but pretty much any kind of bicep curl save for an easy bar curl or a preacher curl, something where, you know, there's an apparatus to hold my wrist in a supinated position, whereas with a dumbbell curl, you have to actively supinate it, or a hammer curl or reverse curl is the worst. So it's that brachialis area right here, if you're looking on YouTube, that just, it can't really undergo any kind of strain or stress at all. So I did one bicep exercise. I think I did like two sets and I called it. Went back in for legs the next day, and that elbow was actually really impairing my ability to squat. I couldn't squat any kind of weight at all. So I'm like, it's time for some days off. So I iced it up, got on some ibuprofen, 3 days of rest. I go back in on Monday and it was just like, I was a new man. It was awesome. So I haven't had three consecutive days off of lifting probably in 5 years. At least, even on vacation, I'll go and lift, and you know, I hardly ever take vacation anyway. So, so it was good. And then I went on Monday, you know, I wasn't going to aim to go very heavy, but it still hit some new highs on a couple lifts. And basically everything I did, the pump was just real. It came quickly. It stayed around. It was really good. I can still kind of feel it a little bit. Chest and triceps yesterday went really well. I hit shoulders and biceps today. Shoulders were good. Biceps still iffy. So I'm going to stick with just an easy bar curl and a preacher curl. And pretty much that's it. Probably for about a month or so, continue to ice that thing, keep a wrap on it, and we'll see how it goes. So the other update for the week is I did get a new YouTube video up yesterday. Darren, use your words. Come on now, man. I was really happy with it. So most of my YouTube videos, this is like in the how-to series is what I'm putting up every week in addition to the podcast. But the how-to videos, you know, I typically want those things to be around like 8 to 10 minutes. This one clocked in at about 22 minutes, which is way longer than they will normally be in the future. But the topic was, this may be of interest to some people listening here, what to know about your first competition before you commit to it. So, and I've gotten some feedback from clients as well who are not competitors, but they watch that and they're like, wow, okay, yeah, that's, you know, it's... And, you know, a lot of my clients who are non-competitors are just, you know, body transformation clients. And, you know, they're going through effectively contest prep. It's a lot of the same rigors of it. It's just, you know, you don't have to pick a show. You don't have to buy a damn suit. You don't have to work on your posing as much. We have talked about that before, the importance of posing for progress picks, whether you compete or not. They don't have a specific date on the calendar that they're working towards necessarily. In some cases, they certainly do. But the process is much the same. So, if you know anybody, if you have friends that are looking to compete, and they just kind of want to know more about it, that video is a great place to start. So if you go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/5starfitness, and check it out. You can subscribe to everything on the channel so you get notifications on updates. And that's posted at the front of the how-to series playlist right there on the main channel page as well. So check that out. Also, if you follow me on Instagram at 5starfit, that is currently the link that's in my bio. If you're listening to this at a later date, like next week, it's probably changed since then. But that'll at least get you to my channel. So, all right, that's enough self-promotion. So I don't have a rant or a myth this week. I'm being kind of lazy. It is a holiday week after all, and while I'm not going anywhere, I do intend to take a little bit of time off. I'll probably take half a day tomorrow on Thursday on Thanksgiving Day to walk away from the computer. We'll see how it goes. I do have some stuff to do, but I didn't outline anything, so I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants here today. Uh-oh, watch out. So we do have two topics that I want to discuss, though. They're both a little bit more abstract, but I think it's worth discussing. The first one I want to talk about is NPC Nationals, which just happened this last week in Miami, last weekend. I believe it was Friday, Saturday. So I want to go over that. And then I also just want to talk very generally about coaching philosophies. So my philosophies and, you know, how that might compare to other coaches. And then just a little bit more on the soft skills side of things, the working with people side of things. You know, I've just got a lot that I want to say about it because it's something I feel very strongly about. I am a very opinionated guy, if nothing else. So I just figure it's worth talking about. Whether you're looking for a coach or not, I think it's important to just get a sense of the different kinds of philosophies that are out there. And then even if you're guiding yourself through this process, you can be aware of, you know, well, okay, well, these are some dieting tactics I could try. This is something that I should consider with my training. This is an overall way to approach mindset and mentality. So we'll talk about that a little bit. So I want to go over NPC Nationals here just because you know, it's a big deal. It is, like, you know, about the biggest show. I don't know if it's bigger than USA's, but it's there's certainly numbers one and two as far as bodybuilding shows go pretty much anywhere. So, yeah, it was November 17th and 18th, which makes it, what, Friday, Saturday? Yeah, Friday, Saturday. So what happened? So what goes down here? So pretty much, you know, there's a few things struck me here. So I'm for all you YouTube people watching around, like, what's he looking at? I pulled up the results in the gallery sheet here at RX Muscle just because they have pretty good coverage. It's a little hit or miss on some things, but it's pretty comprehensive for the big shows like Nationals. So the things that kind of strike me here, and I got to tell you, like, as far as following bodybuilding results, I don't really care all that much. Like, a lot of people I know, they get really jazzed for the Olympia. I don't know how long it's been since I've never watched an Olympia live stream, because the last time I cared was before that technology existed. But sometimes I don't even check out the results, just because it doesn't impact me at all. It's not something that I particularly care about. Those people are, you know, they're pretty much on a different planet from my typical clients. So I can't even really learn a lot by watching who wins what, just because it's at such a high level. It's kind of irrelevant. Now, that you could also say, well, it kind of sets the standard for what happens at lower levels. It really doesn't. It doesn't. Like, even if you look at national level results versus local shows, what the judges are looking for at those two levels is very different. And when you compare that to pro level and then the top pro level as well, it's more different still, especially across certain divisions. So just looking at things a little bit more broadly here, what I notice and I'm struck by is, you know, the categories that we have in here. We have men's bodybuilding, we have men's physique, we have men's classic physique. Okay, so it's three categories for guys. A lot of competitors in there. Classic physique, I think, interestingly, doesn't have nearly as many competitors even as bodybuilding, which, I don't know. I mean, I figured that when classic physique was introduced, it was going to be an immediate hit and it was going to start to cannibalize into some of the men's physique competitors. It doesn't necessarily seem like that's been the case. But anyway, I expected also that another thing that could happen is it could take a lot of people who are in bodybuilding and they're like, all right, cool. Well, I'm not big enough to be competitive at the national level there, so let me go into something that has a weight limit as well. But I don't know. It seems like both of those other classes are still thriving. On the women's side of things, there's women's physique. There was actually women's bodybuilding. So this kind of goes against what the NPC and the IFBB said before, in that they were handing out pro cards for women bodybuilders, which, I mean, okay, interesting. And then figure and bikini, no fitness, which is interesting. So I know a lot of people, they have thoughts on fitness competitors and that division in general. But, I mean, you know, it's the only division where in order to be successful, you actually have to be an athlete and not just have a ton of muscle and be really conditioned. You actually have to be an athlete as well. So I think it's curious that it's missing from nationals here. So now looking at some of the numbers, I think it's interesting here. So I did a breakdown here just because I was curious, like, how many people are in each of these divisions here, each of these categories. So in men's bodybuilding, we had 132 competitors, 132 split into weight classes ranging from super heavyweight all the way down to, what's the lowest one, bantamweight. So, you know, typically, you know, around, you know, 10-ish in some of the lower classes. You get into the, like, middleweight, there's about 20. You get into light heavyweight, there's about 30. You get into heavyweight, we're about 20. And then super heavyweight, there's about 25 or so. But 132 total compared to men's physique had 173, classic physique had 109. So for the men in total, that adds up to 414 dudes competing, which is it kind of crazy. That's a lot of guys. And the funny thing is, there are more women than there are men. So in women's physique, one thing that I found that's very interesting, because it seems like, you know, this is it feels like to me that this is the division that's growing the most, because I think some of the women who compete who have a really good social media presence, I mean, a lot of them are women's physique. But it was next to bodybuilding, which was clearly kind of an afterthought at this show. It's the smallest competitive division by far. 45 women competing in women's physique. That's it. Split amongst, what is it, four classes? Yeah, so we had 11 in Class D. We had 13 in C, 11 in B, and 10 in Class A. So 45 total, and that's it, which I thought was kind of interesting. Women's bodybuilding, we had 17. So clearly, if you just wanted to get a pro card, women's bodybuilding is where you go, because the competition is not nearly as steep there, just as far as the sheer volume of people in there. Like light heavyweight had two. Two. And hey, what do you know? Both of them, I think both of them, no, only the class winners. Only the class winners. I mean, for most of these, it was like the top two got pro cards. For bodybuilding, it's just the top one. So, you know, there were 10 heavyweights, two light heavyweights, four middleweights, and one lightweight. You know what? Competition being what it is, I don't know that a whole lot of people want to win their pro card being the only person in their class, but still, a win is a win. You know, you were the best on stage regardless of who else was up there with you or wasn't up there with you. So, so 17 women bodybuilders compared to 45 in women's physique. Figure, back up there, 120 in figure. Bikini, however, 278. Just think about that for a minute. 278 bikini competitors spread amongst eight height classes. Eight height classes. I mean, good Lord. So now we have 16 new bikini pros in our midst. And you know, in case you weren't aware, there's no shortage of IFBB bikini pros out there. There are a lot of them. Now there's 16 more after this last weekend. So, and again, none of this is to belittle any of the work that these people put into it. Especially, you know, those divisions are so competitive. If you win there, I mean, you are deserving of a pro card. I am just saying that I think the NPC and the IFBB have a bit of a problem here, because clearly, I don't know how long finals lasted here, but it probably went on into the wee hours of the morning, just because there are too many damn people at these shows. 874 total competitors, 278 just in bikini. That is ridiculous. At some point, in order to put on a productive show, you've got to put on a cap. You've got to put on some kind of a more stringent qualification system or something like that. I don't know what the solution is, but NPC, you've got a problem here. You've got a problem, because looking at the bikini lineup here, so class A through H, these are the number of women that were competing in each of those categories. Starting at the top, 32, 39, 26, 34, 42, 25, 37, and topping it out in class H, the tallest height class, you had 43 women competing in one class. The situation there, and I've seen this at the national level in much smaller classes than that. And again, no disrespect to the judges, because they have an impossible job. With classes this big, it's impossible to sort everyone out. What happens is that you could be exceptional, but when you've got 42 other women on stage with you, it is very easy to not stand out. You know, I've seen women where, you know, the top 10, you could have thrown them all into a hat, and they could have, you know, number 10 could have won, number 1 could have taken 10th, and nobody would have batted an eyelash. You know, it's just impossible to sort out a class like that, that's that big, in a reasonable amount of time. So there's got to be some kind of a limit put on this stuff. So NPC, IFBB, I'm putting out the call to you guys. Something's got to change here. And the other thing is, with men's bodybuilding, with classic physique, and with women's physique, everybody having a posing routine, that is a problem. This is a bigger issue, I think, at the smaller shows, because at the national level, you know, certain things are expected. I understand that. But at the local shows, and also you have, you know, higher level of physiques at the national level, clearly. At the local level, you know, you go to your state show or whatever, you've got, you know, 12 men in a bodybuilding class. Do we need to see a 90-second posing routine from all of them? I mean, seriously, I would say most of them exhaust their vocabulary of cool poses after about 20 seconds. I would put myself in that category as well. Unless you're a dancer or you've got something really, really cool to show, nobody needs to see 90 seconds of you posing up on stage. It doesn't happen at that level. So I think those routines have got to get trimmed down. You've got to find a way to make finals shorter. Usually pre-judging can be, you can get through that pretty quick. But, you know, when you've got a show this big at Nationals with 40 or more in certain classes, it's just, it's a problem. It's a really big problem. The other thing is, and again, I keep having to qualify my statements this way. No disrespect to any of the competitors up here, but there is a constant thing. This happens at most levels, but I think clearly most often at the national level as well. In men's bodybuilding, where the overall winner is always your super heavyweight, whoever won that class. And it sends the wrong message for a lot of reasons. In this case, the guy who won the super heavy, I mean, sure, he had some size. He was, by a long shot, not the best competitor in that lineup of people who won their classes. I probably would have had him, you know, in the overall pose down, probably about fourth or fifth. But he was the super heavy, so he won. I just don't like it. There is a pattern like, oh, well, he's the biggest guy, so he wins. And that's how you get, you know, that's how you get guys who compete at the top level who are pushing, you know, 280 pounds on stage or more, have guts that are out of control and die in their 50s. So there's a serious problem with this. Something's got to happen, but that's just a judging call. I mean, forget about setting the standards or whatever. I mean, look at the guidelines that have been set as far as what people are being judged on. And then apply them. If you apply those, there's no way this super heavyweight wins. I mean, size is one of the criteria. Yes, so is conditioning, symmetry, presentation, all that other stuff too. So, I mean, you know, and also it's size for your frame. You know, you could take a guy that's 6 inches shorter than him, but if their frame is filled out, you know, it's relative size. It's not absolute size. Like if you look at somebody in a vacuum, you know, do they have good size for their frame? You look at somebody who's a foot taller and sure, they've got more size, but, you know, does the size look as, you know, appropriate and as fitting on their frame? That's the big question that we need to be answering here. So I think there's some issues with that. I don't have a lot of issues with the judging calls, though. I mean, understanding that when you're looking at photos online, it is not the same as being there in person. It really isn't. And also, if you are there in person, where you sit makes a big difference. You know, I've been to shows where, you know, you're sitting back ways and you're like, holy crap, that guy looks ridiculous. And then you get up a little bit closer and you're like, eh, no, maybe not so much. And, you know, the way that they move, you know, I mean, photos can get you started, but it doesn't tell the whole picture, which is why I'm always really hesitant to play the comparison game based just on photos. But for curiosity, you know, I like to do it here every now and then, just kind of see if there's anything clear that jumps out. And also you can get a sense, you know, in some way what the judges are looking for at a specific show. Now, I see who wins here, and I'm not necessarily going to apply that, especially for the men, at a lower level show. For the women, I think sometimes, you know, it does kind of set the standards a little bit more for what the ideal is that you can kind of chase, especially, you know, as the expected level of development goes up, I think there starts to be less correlation between judging at the national level versus the local level. So in bodybuilding, women's physique, I would say, even classic physique and men's physique, you kind of start to see a little bit more correlation. But women's physique in particular, I don't know. These classes were absolutely stacked. You're not going to find that level of competition or anything even close to it at a local show, especially since, you know, it's pretty much stacked top to bottom. There's only 45 women here, so these all came from smaller shows. You know, they were the standouts in those shows, and then you put them all together here. I mean, that's how these shows are built, clearly. But I think it's more evident in women's physique, just because if you go to a smaller show, you're going to see one or two standout competitors and then a whole bunch of people that are much lower down on the proverbial food chain, where they just haven't been doing it as long. They don't have the same level of development. They haven't achieved the same level of conditioning. So what we do see here, and I've seen this backed up at some local shows, specifically in women's physique, is that they're really looking for size and symmetry, and conditioning kind of takes a back seat. Like, you've got to be lean, you've got to have some detail, but they don't necessarily want to see that absolutely shredded to the bone level of conditioning like was common in like 80s and 90s women's bodybuilding, where, you know, you just get that absolutely peeled look. Not here. Here, like, fullness, shape, and symmetry wins the day. Clearly, you've got to be conditioned. But, you know, I would hesitate to say that any of the women in that class, in that division, look soft. But certainly none of them were like, holy crap, peeled kind of level of conditioning. So I think that's good, because Well, let's address the elephant in the room here. I mean, the drug use at a show like this is very high. So, and that's for men and women, not universally, but in most of the divisions, yes, it's going to be pretty high. So, whatever your opinions are on that, the clear thing is that anabolics, the things that you would take long term, pose less of a threat than the things that you would use to achieve that level of conditioning, such as diuretics and things of that nature. So the fact that they are not pushing for that look, I think, is a good sign. So because the only way you're going to get that is through, you know, diuretics and plenty of other ancillaries as well, which that's, you know, recipe for, well, worst case scenario, recipe for a heart attack. And if you do it incorrectly, it's not out of the realm of possibility. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, there are certain things that I never advocate clients using, and that is on that list, just because I don't want to be responsible for that. So anyway, overall, very high level of competition. I don't see anybody that's really like, what, how did they win or anything like that. I mean, it's pretty clear, you know, there are a few people that kind of stand out, but I would encourage you to go through the picks, just kind of look at things, you know, draw your own conclusions. Don't necessarily just listen to me, because I'm just a guy here with a microphone, with a platform that I've given myself. So that does not necessarily mean that my opinion is valid for anything. So check it out. And the only thing I would say is that men's winner, Chris, I mean, I know you're not listening, but no disrespect, man. You got a great physique, but I don't think you should have won that overall. There were a handful of other guys that I would have given the nod to over you. So one other note here, and this is just a numbers note because I enjoy this stuff as a curiosity. So I actually took these names and plugged them into a spreadsheet to do the counting for me. So once again, 874 total competitors. One of the things that I mentioned on a previous episode, which was the finances of bodybuilding, like how much the costs are, I mentioned that the registration fee for this show was $350, which means in registration revenue alone, the promoter racked in $306,000. And then when you throw onto that, you know, the NPC, just from the people who compete in these shows, which is the cream of the crop as far as amateurs are concerned, they rolled in $110,000 just from NPC cards from these people here. When you consider that this is like the top, you know, 2%, you know, the NPC is doing okay as far as money is concerned. So, and promoters are as well. Now, clearly there are costs to cover here at a show like this, but they are more than doing that. And if they weren't, we wouldn't be having this show every year. So I just think it's kind of interesting to think about the finances of it all and how it works. So there you go. So check it out. Where I'm looking at this here is gallery.rxmuscle.com. You'll need to sign in and create a free account. It'll let you view a couple pictures, and then it'll say, hey, sign in, because we don't want you stealing our bandwidth if you're anonymous. So you can create a free account there. This site used to be something. Like the forums used to be interesting, and now it's just really, really annoying assholes for the most part. So stay away from the forums, but the galleries where they have the contest coverage is pretty good. So sign up for a free account there. You can browse through the photos. So I wanted to also talk about this week coaching philosophies. Talk a little bit about mine and some of the other philosophies that I know are out there, just because I think, you know, if you're looking for a coach, it's always good to know what their philosophy is. So, you know, a lot of, you know, I talked about this before on the podcast and on the Q&A that I did, or that I have done. I didn't do one this week, actually. That was the day that we had to take Bella to the vet, so I had to do kind of a last minute cancel on the Q&A. But you know that I hired a coach. It's Dave Kalick. Pretty cool guy. I like him. He does things very differently than how I do. And I think realistically, that's probably good for me, because I have a certain way that I want to do things. Not only with, you know, how I program, like, you know, the kind of diet that I favor, the kind of training that I favor, but also like how I communicate. Like I put everything in spreadsheets. I have everything documented in email. That's just how I work. I prefer to do everything pretty much offline with my clients rather than phone calls, just because it's a pain in the butt to schedule. It's difficult to catch people. You know, I used to do that all the time, and you know, I've had, you know, as any coach has, plenty of clients who have dropped off. You know, they quit, they hit their goals, they go off and do their own thing. I've had a lot of clients who have come back as well. And recently, A few clients have come back, and then we're going to, you know, work towards another show or start working towards a new goal. And I always tell them, like, hey, one thing that's changed is, you know, we used to do phone calls. I don't do that anymore. I just do everything via email right now. It's easier. And they're like, all right, cool. Because, you know, it was kind of a pain to make sure I was available for your call each week. That's how I prefer to do things, and just, you know, very particular, detailed, you know, very much type A in how I present stuff. And Dave, he does things a little bit differently. So, you know, he has different philosophies on dieting. And, you know, one of the things, and I've worked with other coaches in the past as well, and one thing that it's really shown me is that there are a lot of different ways to make this work. And, you know, something may work for your body and it may work well. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the only way to go. You could respond very well to a wide variety of different diets. You could respond well to a wide variety of different training regimens. So what he's got me doing is focusing on, you know, as far as lifting goes, the basics. Like, you know, these are the workouts. You just need to crush those. If they get boring, suck it up and get better at it and push more weight. So it's kind of clear cut that way. So there's not a lot of fluff. There's not a lot of figuring out. It's just kind of like, all right, do it. And the diet is, you know, it's definitely super high protein, which, you know, I favor high protein. This is super high protein. Like, I think the highest I've ever gone before on my my own macros was about 300 grams, 320, something like that. He's got me closer to like 380, which is, you know, pardon my French, a shit ton. And I've got protein fatigue for sure. Am I really still eating this? But I mean, you know, at the same time, it's working. So I'm eating a ton and I'm not really, I mean, the scale's not going up, you know, and detail's improving a little bit. So it's definitely forcing a little bit of a recomp there. The thing that's a little trickier for me is, you know, because I'm very type A, so like my meal plan's always in a spreadsheet, etc. And he not Dave, he sends it to me via text message. So then what I do is I go and I'm like, all right, let me plug this into a spreadsheet, just because that's how my brain processes stuff. I need to see it kind of laid out like that in order to really get a handle on it. And then also at the same time, I plug in the macronutrients for everything, just because I like seeing what those numbers are. So and then he wants to do everything via phone. So, you know, the only things I ever email him are my progress pics. And actually I just text those to him. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we also have a time difference. I'm in Eastern time. He's in California. So he'll call at times when I can't really answer, just because our schedules are off a little bit, but we always catch up. I mean, it's helpful because I have a schedule that allows for a lot of flexibility. So if I didn't, that would be a little bit trickier. So the way that I handle it is, you know, like I said, very type A. So everything that I do is in a spreadsheet. Everything that I do in an email, I'm an over-explainer. When I do check-ins with clients, I take this microphone right here that I'm talking into, I record voice notes, and I send that as an attachment as well. So I'm not just sitting here typing email all day. Okay, you did this right, this was wrong, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I can actually talk, let somebody hear a recording of my voice so they get a little bit more nuance. It's easier for me to provide more detail that way. And then when you're providing constructive feedback, you know, it comes across in writing one way. When you can actually hear the person's voice, you can tell, like, oh, okay, they're not mad at me. They're just trying to make me get better, which is really, I mean, all I'm doing here. And my big thing with clients is positive feedback and reinforcement, which doesn't mean I'm going to blow smoke up your ass all the time, but it does mean that if there's a way to spin a positive out of any situation, I'm going to find a way to do it. Absolutely. So, because what I find typically is that my clients don't need me to be hard on them. They're hard enough on themselves. They need a big fan is what they need. They need somebody who is on their side at all times. So, and that tells them that they can do it, whether they believe it or not, because if you convince somebody that they can do it, then they will eventually believe you and then they will actually do it. So another thing that's important is that I don't treat all my clients the same way, you know, because they don't all have the same goals. And if you'll notice, like on any of my graphics that I put anywhere now, it says 5-star physique, contest prep, body transformation. So those are two very different types of clients. And within contest prep, of course, within that category, you've got, you know, bodybuilding, figure, physique, bikini, etc. Those need to be treated a little bit differently as well. Not so much in your approach, just every person's going to be a little bit different. You know, the aesthetic and the target that you're shooting for, you know, how far you take the conditioning is going to be very different as well. So, but those two categories of people do need to be treated differently. Not universally, but often it's beneficial to treat them a little bit differently, just because if somebody is doing show prep, there's a certain level of expectation for how into it they get. You know, if somebody's doing competition prep, there's a level of expectation, like you're coming into this and you're not totally green. You know, you've got some level of experience, or the expectation is clear that, you know, maybe you don't have a whole lot of experience, but we're going to develop some experience real fast. We've got an ambitious goal and we're going to hit it. Somebody comes to me just for general fitness. They're more in the body transformation category. They may come to me with no experience. Like, I've never been in the gym. I've never followed any kind of structured anything. All right. The expectations, I'm not going to lie, are a little bit different. You know, I'm not going to expect you to follow a contest prep routine. I am going to expect you to follow a diet. I am going to expect you to ask questions. I am going to expect you to learn. There's going to be a more steep learning curve for you, but that just means that we're going to be in more regular contact right off the bat. So as you're trying to get your feet under you rather than pulled out from under you. So, you know, for somebody like that, I may send the plan. They may fire back with, you know, a page of what may seem like really basic questions. And that's fine, because they're starting from a different place. And, you know, as a coach, if you don't want to work with those people, you need to make it very clear who you do want to work with. So it's my job to be patient, explain, over-explain. And, I mean, that's what a coach is. A coach is a teacher. So if you're not willing to do that, you can't call yourself a coach. You'd have to call yourself a plan writer instead, or a programmer. Now, for somebody who's doing contest prep, I've certainly sent some plans off. I had one guy who started last week. I just did his first check-in before I started recording this. So, hey, Zach, if you're out there listening. And you know what? We're working towards a show. It'll be his first show. He hasn't done this before, but he's got experience in the gym. He's got experience tracking macros. He sent me his details today with his updated photos. He sent me his macros for every day, breakdown on what he did for cardio and lifting every day, how everything went, how everything felt, etc. And it was just perfect, flawless, completely. All his macros were on point. It was great. So, and you know, did I get any questions from him when I sent that plan over? No, he just got it, absorbed it, processed it, altered what he was already doing to fit the targets that I'd set for him, and then just attacked it. So, you know, that's great. If you're doing contest prep, that's what I want, because even if you aren't able to do that within the first week, I'd want you to start asking questions so that you can feel comfortable doing that by the second week. And, you know, just not deal with, oh, I haven't, you know, I still haven't made it out grocery shopping, or, oh, this is my second time through this workout and I still don't know what this exercise is. I'm like, no, you're doing contest prep. We need to get that stuff figured out ASAP. Expectations are higher. Not just for, you know, where we're taking your physique. And certainly I've worked with some body transformation clients that easily could have stepped on stage. They just didn't want to. It wasn't in their goal set. It wasn't something that motivated them. It wasn't something that they wanted to do. So, but if you're doing prep, the expectation is, you know, I in most cases, you're going to know more right off the bat, but I'm going to expect you to learn more and learn faster as we go along if you've got more catching up to do. So from a dietary perspective, you know, my philosophy is, you know, macronutrients work in most cases, rather than following a set meal plan. Whether or not it's best for you, it really kind of depends. And it's more about what fits your brain. You've heard that some people are more like visual learners. Some people are more oral learners. Some people learn by writing it down. You know, with a meal plan, some people excel, or with nutrition, some people excel by following a meal plan. Some people do great with macros. Some people, if you have them do macros, they're going to struggle. They're going to be unable to hit the numbers. Just like the math of it doesn't make sense. A lot of people think they're in that category. And then if you actually put their nose down to it and force them to give it a shot, they find that they actually can do it. I've worked with a lot of clients like that I had to really, really push, because they're like, I don't want to eat the same stuff every day. I'm like, well, that's what a damn meal plan is. You're going to eat the same stuff every day until we change it. They're like, well, I don't want to. I'm like, well, then, you know, macros are for you then. Well, I don't want to track macros. Okay, well, do you want to whine about it, or do you want to get something done, and do you want to learn something? So let's learn how to track macros. You can get your freedom. You can get your flexibility. And almost universally, the feedback that I've gotten from clients are like, I'm so glad that you pushed me in that direction, because then they can feel more like a normal person. They're following a plan, they're hitting their numbers, but they're not necessarily limited on their foods. Now, when I do macros, also, it is not a free-for-all. There are certain guidelines that I put in place with regards to meal composition, with regards to not so much meal timing, but like number of meals, carb timing, sugar allotment, and stuff like that. So it's not like all of your carbs all day long are going to be Oreos and Chips Ahoy or anything like that. But, you know, there's room for freedom and flexibility to incorporate those kind of things in most situations. There does get to be a point a lot of times, especially like towards the end of contest prep, especially if you're targeting a division that rewards an extreme level of conditioning, like bodybuilding, men's bodybuilding specifically, where, yeah, I mean, you know, that sugary stuff and other things, you know, we might want to not necessarily transition to a meal plan, but put a few more restrictions in place. Like, okay, oftentimes I'll say, well, let's cut out dairy around this time here, just because it's not doing us any good. I'd like to get things a little bit cleaner than that. When you have a level of expectation for your body that is that high, it's going to take some work, and it's going to take some sacrifice, and it's going to take leaving some things off the table as well. So I think both approaches are fine for diet. And then the other question is, well, what about, you know, what should the macros be? Should it be, you know, high carb, low fat? Do you like high protein, high fat, keto, you know, whatever it is? And I would just say all of those things work. Some may work better or worse for your body type. You may feel better or worse on some of those. And like I said, you know, like I've always done well with moderate protein, moderate carbs, low fat. My coach currently has me on super high protein, super high fat, fairly controlled carbs, and it's working well. So better than anything else in the past, too early to say just yet, as far as I'm concerned, but it does work still. So, you know, some people do really well on a ketosis plan. Some people would, and I'd put myself in this category, would rather kill themselves than even try it. So it kind of depends. Like if you put a plan in place, unless you've got somebody that's just hardcore, they're a robot, you can literally like just sit there and program them. They're going to do whatever you want. Those people are few and far between. Somebody like that, if you put a plan in place that is unpleasant and difficult to follow, they're not going to do it. And for me, we need to succeed. We need to actually make the target. And then the precision or the degree with which we crush that target is almost secondary in a lot of cases. So like, you know, when we're doing a show, I've got to make sure that I actually get you to show day, first of all. And especially if it's your first show, the victory is in making it there. And then for show number two, the victory is in pushing a little bit harder and beating your conditioning from the first show. If we put a plan in place and you drop out and you don't make it to the show, then you know, that's a failure in my mind. As a coach, that means I've failed. That means I did not put a plan in place that set you up to succeed. And a lot of the times it's just, you know, trying to mitigate the overwhelming nature of what prep feels like. Like, all right, you know, we don't need a cheat meal here, but if a cheat meal here is the difference between you going on for another week or two and you just bowing out of prep and disappearing from my life completely, let's keep it going here. Because especially for a first show, like I said, the victory is in getting there. So when it comes to training, you know, I mean, again, anything works. My big philosophy is, and this is another area where I diverge from Dave a little bit. He's all about weight, push the weight. And my philosophy when I'm working with clients is more about mind-muscle contraction above all else. The weight is secondary. It's important, but it's secondary. And we don't necessarily want to be chasing higher numbers, especially if it takes us out of the zone where we're not really feeling things anymore. And also going with a plan that de-emphasizes weight a little bit and is more about quality of execution, full range of motion, hard isometric contractions, you know, mind muscle connection and all that, slower tempos, you're going to be less prone to injury as well, which is huge because I do always, even if we're working towards a first show, I'm already thinking about your second, third, fourth, and fifth show as well and making sure that we have something that's sustainable and that you can, you know, stay relatively healthy while doing it and not miss a lot of time for injury, because that's going to be the biggest killer for people down the road. When it comes to supplementation, that's an easy one for me. Less is more. I've been on record many times that I think the supplement industry by and large is pretty much a scam that's trying to just get people's money. So, so much of that stuff just doesn't really do anything. Or if it does, it's such a minuscule thing that it's not worth it. Everything's got to be a cost balance analysis, cost benefit analysis. So, you know, you take a thermogenic, okay, yeah, it's not worthless, but is it worth, you know, $45 or whatever the hell it is for that bottle? All these, you know, topical creams and things that you put on that are like, you know, toning or tightening or whatever, it's snake oil. It's 21st century snake oil. It doesn't do crap. Stay away from it. That is, I think, one of the things that's most indicative of the problem in this industry is you've got companies that exist solely just to scam people. And, you know, the people that use it, you know, they're affiliates. They're like, this stuff works great. Of course, you're getting free product. You're getting some promote. You're getting some visibility, et cetera, from this. So, yeah, of course, I mean, no. I mean, that's a conversation for another day. The point here is supplementation, less is more. So just a little talk about philosophy there, just so you can kind of get inside my head a little bit and, you know, compare your own philosophies to mine. I'm not saying that mine are necessarily right. Like I said, with most of this stuff, there are a lot of ways to do it. But when you're looking for a coach or you're looking to evaluate how you tackle your own plan, just know what the options are. Try something. Commit to it. Whether you're setting a plan up for yourself or whether you're going to go with a coach, just know what their approach is beforehand. And then, you know, unless they give you a reason not to, trust them and follow along. Like with me and Dave, you know, it's not necessarily what I believe in, but, you know, I am where I am right now, which I feel like, you know, I could be in a lot better position than where I am now as far as aesthetically is concerned. And so, you know, why not try something different? That was my whole approach, you know. So his approach is fairly different from mine, and that's one of the reasons why I chose him. Just like, we're going to see how this works. So a lot of different ways to go about it. That's the end, the point that I hope you take home from this. So that about wraps it up for our pre-Thanksgiving Day episode of the Drop Set, episode 30. So thank you all for joining. I do appreciate it. Like I said, that video is up on YouTube, so check that thing out. Everything you wish you would have known about contest prep before committing to your first show. YouTube.com/5StarFitness, star with two R's, to go check that out. In the meantime, follow me on Instagram at 5StarFit, Facebook.com/5StarPhysique, 5StarPhysique on Pinterest. I'm throwing up a lot of stuff on Pinterest now, so you can follow me there. And oh, where else? Twitter. I'm actually tweeting a little bit now, which seems weird. So anyway, that's all I got. So once again, thank you for listening. I really appreciate everybody who's tuned in on YouTube or just audio only, iTunes, Google Play, on the website, etc. So thank you all. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Safe travels if you're going anywhere. Safe travels on the way back. Catch up on the next one.